Thank you, everyone. I just need to inform all parties that today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect your line at this time, and you may begin.
Thank you very much, Larry. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is the SCI call on the 28th of January, 2014. On the call today, we have Ron Andros, Andy Graves, Jennifer Wolf Knobin, Anik Manskalesi, and Amir Sadir. We have no received apology for today. Oh, my apologies. I have forgotten, and Marie-Laure Lumineur has also joined the call. As I was saying, no apology received for today. And from staff, we have Julie Headland, Mary Wong, and myself, Natalie Peregrine. I'd like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you, Ron.
Thank you, Natalie. Just for the record, I would note Sintra will be joining the late. She had sent through a message, and I'm not sure if that got captured or not, but she'll be joining shortly. And I see Amr on the list is dialing in now, so all good. Now that the roll call has been taken, the next item on the agenda is the statements of interest, and the question is, has anyone had any changes to their SOI since we last met? Hearing none, we'll move on then to the next item on the agenda.
I'm sorry, Ron. This is Julie Headland. Amr has raised
her hand. Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you, Julie. Thank you, Amr. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Ron. Thanks, Julie. This is Amr. I don't have a change to my SOI, but I did think that now would be a good time to tell you all that the NCUC Executive Committee has just appointed a new alternate to the Standard Committee. And I guess I will send an email to the list, and I thought I should let maybe Julie know. Julie, are you the right person to notify if a new appointment has been made to the committee?
Yeah, that's fine. That would be great, because then I can go ahead and coordinate with the secretariat to make sure that we get the person onto the list and get the person added to the wiki and so on.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, Amber. Can you share the name at this point? Or
Yeah, it's David Cake, who is also a counselor representing the NCUG.
Very good. Yeah, I know David as well. Excellent. Great. So we can look forward to seeing David joining. Pardon me, joining us then in the next meeting. Thank you for that. Sharing that. All right. Then I was moving on to agenda item number three, which was the approval of the agenda that we have on the right-hand side of the screen. Does anyone have anything they'd like to add, or any other business that they'd like to make note of before we get started? All right, hearing none, we'll accept that as the approval of the agenda. And that moves us to agenda item number four. And this is a new piece of work. It's a review of the GNSO Working Group Guidelines consensus levels. And Julie, I assume, is sharing. I think, Julie, you're in control of the screen, or perhaps Natalie, is sharing with us the information, the background information on this topic. Having said that, I'm wondering if there are any counselors. I don't see on the Adobe Connect that we have anyone from council. Oh, Jen Wolf. I wonder, Jen, could you shed a little light on this topic if you were present when this was discussed at council?
I'm sorry. I'm not following. When was this discussed at council?
We're talking about agenda item number four. It's review of the GNSO Working Group Guidelines.
Yeah,
and
blinking on when that was last discussed at council. I know we've been talking about some general improvements to the PDP process, but I don't recall. Julie or Mary, you're on the line. Do you recall when that was discussed?
I see Mary's hand is up. Please, Mary, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Ron. Hi, Jen. Thanks very much. Actually, Ron, I was going to suggest that maybe we postpone this item for a little bit. I don't know if Thomas is planning to join the call, but I know that Greg Shatton is planning to join the call. And the reason why I'm suggesting this is because it wasn't actually like a council agenda action item, but it was something that came out of the IGO-INGO working group, which Thomas chaired, which Greg was a member of. So while I can give the background and explain it might be better to wait to see if either of them will come to the call today.
I see Greg Schatten is going to join at some point on the list here. So that's great. Thank you, Mary. I think it's a very good idea. Let's have the people who were present and were discussing it at the time. So we'll let's leave that one then. And pardon me, we'll come back to that when we see Greg has joined or others have joined that can shed some light on that. So that moves us then to the item number 5. Which is the possible inclusion of waiver exception in the GNSO operating procedures. And right now we're looking at some information on the screen about this topic. I see Anne Aikman-Scalais has put her hand up, so Anne, please take the floor, and then Marie-Laure, you'll follow.
Yes, thank you, Ron. This is Anne Aikman-Scalais with IPC, and I guess I was going to comment that I think, again, both Greg Schatten and Thomas are quite involved in this issue as well, and so I don't know if we should, again, postpone for a short time if they're both going to be on the call, or in other words, Mary's suggestion may be equally applicable to this topic.
Well, we do have Marie-Laure, who is party to that work, and she has some comments there. So why don't we go to Marie-Laure first, and then we'll see how her thoughts are. Please.
Okay.
Marie-Laure, thank you.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Thank you. This is Marie-Laure speaking. Actually, I was actually going to suggest exactly the same as Anne did, and Mary did, is wait for Greg. Because I can start. The thing is that we've been working with Greg over the last 2 days, and he had he added some meat to what we did previously with Mikey and Thomas. So I don't know whether, you know, we can skip item number 5 and go to number 6, and if the same is going to happen, or I shall start. But I would like to wait for him. If it's possible. If not, I can, you know, start speaking. But
certainly. Well, we find ourselves in a tricky situation because, in fact, on the next item, voting by email, it was Avery and Thomas as well.
Oh boy!
So he was very active in that part too. But I'm seeing that when it comes to the item on consensus levels, Mary would like to kind of lead on that. But on the email voting, unfortunately, I think we have to wait because we don't have Avery with us any longer, and Thomas is not on. So I guess let's go with Mary's suggestion. We go to the working group consensus levels because Amar can also add to that. He noted. And that way we can come back and circle around when those others join. So with that, Mary, may I turn to you and let you start, and then we'll get Amar in the mix.
Thanks, Ron. And Amar, I'm happy to see you at any time since you're on the council. Perhaps what I could do is start with the background, since I was staff support or together with Barry Cobb for the IGO-INGO working group, which, as I've mentioned, Thomas chaired. Essentially, and you know, if you are looking at the first page of the document, that the current working group guideline specifies various different levels of consensus, ranging from full consensus to divergence. Thank you, Julie. And you'll see that here the levels are defined, and where we have had working groups that had to do various consensus calls, all of these different levels have been reflected in the report, including minority views that may be expressed during the working group deliberations. And I see that Greg is joining me, so I'm sure that, Greg, you should correct me if I get any of this stuff wrong, but I'm talking about what happened in the IGO-INGO working group. The one level of consensus that the working group referred back to the GNSO Council, which caused the Council to then refer it to the SCI without further discussion at the Council because it was felt to be an SCI issue is what marked as divergent. And you see here that it's referred to as no consensus. What the working group found was that in their particular case, it wasn't so much a divergence of viewpoints or no consensus because of a plethora of viewpoints. For example, in this document, it says there's no strong support for one position, but many different points of view. In the working group, there wasn't strong support for a proposal that was supposed to be a recommendation, but there were not many different points of view. In fact, there was one point of view that was shared by most of the working group members against that position. And so going through the different levels, the working group found that there really wasn't any particular language or level that described position, which really, frankly, ultimately was referred to as consensus against. Because if, in effect, if you go up to the consensus bullet point, it says a position where only a small minority disagree, but most agree. That's what happened in the working group, but it wasn't consensus for, it was consensus against. And I'm going to stop here and see if Amar or Greg would like to add to the background and perhaps lead off the discussion.
Thank you very much, Mary. Amar, Greg, who wants to take a kick at the cat here in furthering this dialogue? Greg, please go ahead.
Sure. I think just to add to what Mary said, and I came in on the middle, so apologies if I'm redundant. The reason this really came up at all was that we were dealing with a matrix of many possible recommendations because of the complexity and number of issues we were dealing with. I think if we had been dealing with only one or two potential recommendations, we would have had the time in the group to basically flip the language and make it consensus for the opposite of what we had a consensus against. But because we had a matrix with maybe 40 different possibilities in it, it really just wasn't possible under the circumstances we were dealing with to easily just flip to the opposite. And therefore, while we really wanted to express a consensus against, there was no language available to us to do it. And none of the existing levels of consensus provided us with an accurate description of what what the sentiments of the group were. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. Anne, please go ahead.
Thanks, Ron. This is Anne with IPC. I had a question that really goes to what Greg was just talking about, because when you just read these consensus levels as written, it looks as though the use of the word recommendation means, a recommendation that's being made by the working group itself. And so in light of how that is written, it almost seems to me that if there's a recommendation by the working group itself that is against, then that's a consensus against. And so that, in other words, the working group's recommendation, as that term is used here in the guidelines, it looks as though the working group would be able to put in writing, the working group has developed a consensus recommendation against, the following things in the chart. And so probably because I didn't participate in this particular one, I'm having trouble understanding what would prevent the working group from simply saying the working group recommends by consensus or unanimous consensus or whatever against adopting X, Y, and Z in the chart.
Well, here's the reason why that doesn't work. This is Greg again. What we were dealing with was a chart of recommendations, and that was out for a consensus call. And sure, if we had another couple of months, we could have developed an addition, changed the wording of the recommendation or come up with a recommendation about a recommendation. But in the sense, we had a recommendation that was phrased, in the positive and which basically almost everyone was against. But it wasn't that it wasn't the recommendation that they were we weren't recommending that we were against it. It was a recommendation which had a consensus in opposition to it. So we,
sorry, but it seems to me to be the same thing.
No, it's
the
not.
The working group's recommendation is against the recommendations, and the working group has a consensus recommendation to that effect.
No, it didn't, because that wasn't what was on the consensus recommendations that were sent out for consensus call was a recommendation in favor. And what we're trying to do is to avoid a whole second consensus call. If we could have done a second consensus call on to put out a new recommendation or to change the existing recommendation, but what we wanted to do was to express the consensus of the group, which was not merely that we were that there was a minority view. There was essentially a majority view, but it wasn't in opposition to a consensus. It was in opposition to a minority view in favor.
My. This is wrong.
I'm very.
I feel like I need a scorecard. It's a really tricky one. Mary, I see your hand up for a minute. Perhaps you can shed some light on this, and then I'll come back to you, Amar. Mary.
I'm not sure. I'll try to follow Greg, because I want to thank him for explaining why this particular issue, I guess, was particularly complicated, because it was a particularly complex recommendation and in a rather, it wasn't the working group that was controversial, but it was, let's just say, a very lively group with a lot of lively discussion. So it may well be, you know, before I get to my comment, that this is a relatively simple fix. It may well be, for example, that this group, the SCI, could simply say what Anne said, that to the extent that there is consensus against, well, too bad. Then you have to phrase your recommendation in the negative and make sure that is the case. Or, for example, the group can add another footnote to the one or more of the bullet points here to say consensus against is perfectly acceptable as long as the context is clear. I'm not suggesting any of those things. I'm just saying that's certainly one way this group can come out. Fortunately, I guess we don't, not all our working groups really get into that many recommendations and complexities. But one added point I will add is that for this particular group, and Greg will recall this, the sensitivities were such that that particular proposal, actually I'm using the word proposal because ultimately, there was a discussion as to whether the recommendation was even appropriate since there was no consensus for it and it was changed to proposal. So it is a fairly complicated origin. But I suppose the question for this group is, in situations like this, what is the working group guideline document? What does it tell the group to do? And it may be, like I said, that consensus against could be something that's added, or it could be some sort of advice from the SCI. It may be something very simple that in the future, working groups should just be careful about how they phrase their recommendations. But I do think that we may come across these situations again in some controversial, complex, or complicated issues and discussions. And so it seems like the council is raising it now, so that, A, there is awareness of the issue, and, B, at least there's some discussion amongst the appropriate group like the SCI to see whether or not you want to do something about it. So your choice might be, no, it's fine, it's clear enough, just make it clear that it's consensus against, that's okay, or you may want to propose additional language, or you may want to propose additional levels. So the background, I guess, is relevant to that extent.
Thank you, Mary. Amar.
Thanks, Ron Slomer. To be very frank, I think I agree with Anne, and Mary also touched upon this point of just really how you word the recommendations of coming out of a working group. So to have a recommendation that the majority of the working group does not approval, or the majority of the working group have a consensus against, it just strikes me as a bit strange that this would be a recommendation coming out of the working group, because effectively the working group could just recommend the opposite of what that recommendation is and have a consensus for. So as an example, just in recommending not adopting a certain policy as opposed to recommending adopting one. Having said that, I can see how the language in the guidelines is also sort of inherently associates consensus with a positive outcome, which might really sort of I see Mary's once discussed whether diversion really equates to no consensus. From my understanding of this case is that this wasn't an issue of divergence. So going over this, it wasn't really divergent. It was just that full consensus, or consensus, actually, it just really associates a majority agreeing with a recommendation whilst a minority disagrees. And this wasn't the case in this working group, although the wording of the recommendation could have really been changed. I do have some suggested language changes to make that a bit clearer at this point. I'll try to cut and paste them into the chat. But honestly, I do see things the way Anne does. I think that the wording of a recommendation could be chosen more carefully to express the consensus level in the working group of saying, yes, we recommend that this policy not be adopted, as opposed to saying there is a consensus against a recommendation. Thanks.
Amar, before I let you go, let me ask a question, just a clarifying point for those of us who were not privy to the whole discussions within that working group. So that we understand this clear, this is not an issue of the chartering organization giving an improper mandate or a mandate that brought this about, but rather it was actually the working group itself that wrote up something and as a recommendation, and the recommendation was not for something but rather against something. Am I going down the right path?
No, Ron, this is Amar. Yeah, I wasn't on the working group, but that is just what I understood from the background document. Greg could probably correct me.
Yeah, the recommendations, there were several dozen recommendations. There were kind of a matrix of branching variable matrix, and they really were very carefully written. So it wasn't a matter of care in writing. But rather that when we went through the various matrices, and there were, you know, several pages of them, by and large, there was either, you know, a consensus in favor of those recommendations, or the recommendations failed because there was, you know, no consensus or divergence of opinion. But in a couple of cases, what came out of the matrix was a strong consensus against a particular potential recommendation. And rather than merely discarding the recommendation and being silent as to the position of the working group on that recommendation, we wanted to express opposition. And the problem with the consensus levels is that they're all optimistic. They're only about how much everyone loves the recommendation. Do they love it completely? Do they love it a lot? Do most people love it? Or does everybody have different opinions? But there isn't anything that says, we hate this recommendation. Now, yes, we could have spent an extra month or two doing this and rephrased that particular recommendation out of the 72 that we had in the opposite, done a new consensus call, and delayed things even further, which would have been a policy disaster because this is the IGO-INGO issue where basically the GNSO and the GAC are going to end up in some kind of steel cage match as to who the ICANN board decides to ultimately listen to. And if we delayed things further, we would have been playing to an empty ballroom by the time we finished. So time was of the essence. There's no reason that the consensus levels shouldn't allow for negative consensus, that everything should be in positive numbers. There's no negative numbers allowed. I don't know why. Maybe people have been reading Candide or Pollyanna too much, and that nobody's allowed to, you know, nary has heard a discouraging word. But in this case, a lot of care was taken, and the recommendations flowed in a particular way because of the matrix of considerations. And in this particular case, there were a couple of particular recommendations that really needed to be, in the sense of the group, voted down and not merely just discarded from the recommendation list. And there's no reason that there shouldn't be a reason to vote against a recommendation with something that is stronger than divergence, because there wasn't divergence. There was an agreement, but it was an agreement that it was a bad recommendation.
Thank you, Greg. That's helpful. That clarifies that point for me. Anne, please, you've been patient. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much, Ron. It's Anne. I still feel that when we're describing the problem here, that we are confusing two different sets of recommendations. The use of the word recommendation in the working group guidelines to me means the recommendation of the working group.
Well, these were the recommendations of the working group. They were what was out for consensus call. Those are the recommendations that were in front of people, and we wanted to vote that recommendation down and indicate that there was a consensus that that recommendation should be out.
So the working group made a recommendation that the working group...
No, it didn't make a recommendation. It didn't make a recommendation. It put a recommendation out for consensus call. A number of the recommendations didn't make it, of the potential recommendations didn't make it because there was no consensus around them.
And where did those recommendations come from?
They were all potential recommendations. They came from within the working group, and they were being voted on as to whether they would actually become recommendations of the working group.
Right. So that's, Greg, if you'll let me finish, where I think the distinction lies that I'm not sure we need a new rule for. Because I think what full consensus means talks about that final recommendation that's made that comes as the result of the working group action. I don't think it means a chart that you're voting on. I think that it speaks about your final action.
Well, then how would you do a consensus call on that recommendation?
What you're describing is a situation where there's a consensus against, and so the recommendation out of the working group is consensus against.
No, the recommendation was what was being considered. The potential recommendation. There was no consensus in favor of it. What I would suggest is that anybody who believes this isn't an issue should read all the transcripts of the meetings at which this was discussed and the final report and probably the draft report as well.
Well, how did the group ultimately deal with it? What was done?
A footnote and a request to the SCI to deal with this so that we wouldn't have to, you know, deal with it ad hoc. Again, you know, it was a footnote that there was a consensus against, but that there, in the guidelines, there's no ability to express a consensus against.
Thanks, Greg. I see Mary has her hand up, and then that will be followed by Wolf Ulrich. Mary?
Ron, I'm happy to speak to Wolf and to go after him.
Thank you. Wolf Ulrich.
Yeah, hi. Thanks. Charles, I was following, so the discussion is still... I'm really confused, feel confused, but to understand what was the real problem and how this group could really assist and help in avoiding such situations in the future. As we have this working group guidelines with this list of different levels of consensus here, so I'm wondering how we can deal with it in a different way than as Mary was pointing out with reference to the point of divergence. So just the question, is divergence in this case, is that seen as no consensus or not? So I would like to point to that point and to focus on that point, because I think a situation like you describe, Greg and others who have worked within that working group, it may be not avoidable in the future. So in such complex cases, so I cannot think about, you know, what kind of cases could arise. But from my experience, you can't avoid such a situation coming up. And then it's up to, let me say, it's a kind of of working within that group and working on the group behavior, how you can deal with that. So there is not a real, from my point of view, I cannot give you any advice on that. That's fine. So this is my opinion on that. So I could only try to talk about and to discuss that point of question, is divergence, is that a point of which we could refer to as no consensus or not? Thank you.
Thank you, Wolf-Ulrich. Mary, please go ahead.
Right, thank you, Ron, and thank you, Wolf-Ulrich, for picking up that point, because one thing is, and I know this group knows this very well, is that while the origin of a problem is usually why things get to SCI, your recommendations, proposals, and drafts have to be of more general applicability going forward. So it seems to me, like I said, having been staff support for the working group and having lived with Greg through all the deliberations, discussions, and arguments, that if we simply look at this document, the excerpt text right here, the problem could be, if not fully summarized, at least for now, boiled down to two things. First is something Greg said, that whether or not it is expressly stated here, that the spirit and certainly the interpretation of these consensus levels have been sort of in the positive or towards the affirmative. So there is support for, not so much support against. And so you see this particularly in the divergence bullet point where it says there isn't strong support for a particular position that doesn't talk about support against. So it seems to me that going back to the divergence and no consensus point, maybe this group could discuss the possibility of expanding or elaborating on the existing consensus levels to include some clarification that where there's strong support against something, that there could be designated a particular level, and as Greg is suggesting, consensus against. And I'm seeing what he's saying in the chat, and maybe what I can emphasize here is that, and going back to what you're saying earlier, there wasn't strong support for the particular position, but it wasn't that as a consequence, everybody but one in the working group therefore supported a different position. There simply was strong support against this position, and the working group felt very strongly, and the chair himself, I think, and Chalmers can probably explain this better than I can, felt that this was, if not a large gap, at least a gap in the working group guidelines. So it seems to me that, like I said, two things. One is, in terms of the divergence equals no consensus, maybe there should be something there that talks about against. But similarly, when one talks about consensus in the second bullet point, there could be clarification that this could include consensus for as well as consensus against. So my first point would take into account what Greg is saying, that you may have support against but not for anything in opposition to. And the second point hopefully addresses some of what Anne was saying, in that it's implicit in the document, but why not make it explicit that there can be consensus for and consensus against.
Thank you, Mary. I'm watching the chat as members are speaking, and Anne has just noted, if we see the footnote that Greg refers to, I think this will be very helpful for the committee to actually see some background information on this as to what happened, because I think for a lot of us, we still have a lot of questions in our mind, as well as Greg and Amar and Mary have explained the situation. There's still something there that is not quite catching with me, and it's probably an easy fix in so much as if we wanted to just reword or add some amending language to consensus to clarify, that might solve the problem. But then again, this may be just an anomaly. Something that's happened one time is never going to happen again. And one of the things of the SCI, kind of a standing rule for us, is a light touch, not to just change things because they've been given to us and we should change them automatically. So I'm by way of this statement, I'm asking staff if you might be able to go back and find this information for us in the transcripts or the footnote that would help clarify it for the rest of the members. And I'm going to offer Greg had his hand up, as Amar, the last word on this before we move to the next topic. So let's start with Greg, please.
Thanks. It's Greg Shatton again. I think, you know, first, I don't think this will be an isolated instance. It may not be a common instance, but it's, I don't think it'll be isolated because I think any time a group has to deal with a complex number of recommendations or recommendations and sub-recommendations, this has the ability to occur. And I don't think there was any group behavior or lack of positive behavior that resulted in this happening. It was really a matter of, you know, dealing with a complex matrix. And, you know, we could have put together a negative matrix and had everybody vote in favor of the ones they were against and against the ones they were in favor of, but that would have been silly, too. I think the way to look at this is best is that consensus kind of acts as a thermometer on which there are no negative numbers. The lowest you get is kind of freezing. And you
still
can,
warm,
you
I think. Still
the,
warm
yeah.
is more. still
right,
warm,
right.
I think,
kind of
Greg. Not even freezing. Yeah.
But you don't get to below 32 degrees or whatever, you know, zero Celsius. You don't get below that on the consensus level because everything is about how much the level of positive engagement with a recommendation there is when you put a recommendation in writing out for consensus and ask people whether they support that consensus or not. And they each one either votes yes or no. And if everybody votes no, what do you call that?
Right.
It's not
exactly.
It, you know, if you read what was, you know, on the in the middle of the page there, it's all about how much in favor of everything is. So we need some negative numbers on the thermometer for this type of instance, whether it can be, and I don't think it could be avoided in all cases. Thank
Thanks,
you.
Greg. Amr, last topic before we move to the next one. Amr's put his hand down, I think, unless you would like to come back in, Amr. All good.
Oh, sorry.
All right.
I was on mute. Yeah.
Please go ahead. Just go ahead.
This is Amr. I just think it's important to clarify that this situation here is not a situation of divergence. In case there is some misunderstanding of that, this is a situation where, as it appears to me, that there is consensus on a certain position. This position in this situation is against a recommendation, which I still find to be a little strange. I did come up with some text that might support this sort of scenario where there is a recommendation with consensus against it. However, I have to stress that I am not really in favor of this sort of thing. I personally don't see a problem with the consensus levels as they are. I guess I don't understand the context to a degree that will allow me to appreciate why it was so difficult within this matrix of recommendations to change the recommendations and sort of turn them around so there's a consensus for these recommendations as opposed to against them. But if that is a case that we need to understand a little better and have a clear understanding of the context where it comes from, then the text could be changed. However, and I did take a stab at doing that. However, I still have to stress that I am not very happy with the idea. Thanks.
Thanks, Amr. And that's why I'd like staff to inform us a little bit better with some background details. So let's move along as we're, you know, running out of time. So if we could then, Greg, now that you've joined the call, we went past the waiver exception early on because you were not on the call, and Marie Leray was hoping that you would join and that we could have a deeper conversation about this because you've been working on this over the last couple of days. So I turn it over to you, Marie Leray, or to Greg to take the lead on this one. Waiver exception in GNSO operating procedures.
Well, this is Greg. I'm happy to take the lead.
Thank you, Greg.
You know, I think that we need to start by discussing as we have in what circumstances do we need a waiver mechanism. The particular instance in which this came up was after the GNSO Council had adopted a 10-day rule, which is that all motions had to be submitted 10 days prior to a meeting, which was put in place in response to an earlier issue with those last-minute motions. When it was drafted, there was no exception procedure drafted for that particular 10-day procedure, and there is no general procedure by which the GNSO Council can waive or suspend its standing rules. So what we wanted to consider was a methodology for waiving a standing rule in a particular instance, which could be limited just to this 10-day rule or could be a general rule as to how a standing rule of the GNSO Council can be waived. And then we would need to discuss kind of what the contours of that would be. So what we generally discussed was that often occurs in other deliberative bodies is the concept of unanimous consent allowing the group to waive or suspend for a particular instance a standing rule on a temporary basis. In some other organizational structures, a two-thirds vote is sufficient for certain standing rules to be waived.
Thank you, Greg. Marie Leray, you've been giving some thought to this. Would you like to add a comment or two?
Yes. Let me see. There are all other aspects that we need to consider and that we discussed with Greg, and one of them is whether we should consider having a waiver mechanism that applies only during that can be used when there are meetings, GNSO Council meetings, versus having a waiver mechanism that could be also used in between meetings. So we just sort of wanted input from the SCI about that. And there are also we discussed with Greg the possibility of having the unanimous of all voting members during the meetings, the councillors, versus unanimity of those councillors who are present. These are two ways of handling the unanimity rules. So these are the aspects we need to discuss. So I'm guessing we just need to hear from you guys.
If I could add one more thing to that.
Please, go ahead.
I'm not entirely certain where we are on the point of the GNSO Council voting on anything between its formal meetings or special meetings. I think we were actually just up to the point of possibly allowing email voting during a meeting. I don't think we've created any general rule that the GNSO Council can vote on anything conduct any dispositive business between its meetings, unless I'm incorrect.
If I may add, this is exactly, I do share this opinion, but we might want to hear the opinion of the rest of the members of the committee about that.
Thank you both very much. Who would like to engage in this discussion? So someone is typing very loudly in all of our ears. Perhaps can go on mute when they're not. Thank you. So this is Ron speaking. So for my part, that we're looking here for a way to modify operating procedures that have been functioning for some time. And I'm not sure if this particular operating procedure has been modified at all over the course of the history of the GNSO Council. But it seems to me that the quote from Jonathan is quite clear. He wasn't empowered to allow the motion be put on the table, even if technically he would have done it. And so this is an issue, I think, for the chair of the GNSO Council, not having that tool in the toolbox. if I look at our list of members and I pick on Avery quite regularly because she was the chair of the council for some time, I wonder, Avery, could you shed some light on how important or not this having this tool would be as a chairperson of the GNSO? I wonder if Aubrey's on mute or stepped away. Wolf, please go ahead.
Thanks, Juan. So, if I understand it correctly, so I think
you,
the... Is it Aubrey? So,
I heard her in the distance.
I mean, I'm not really sure... all that to find out. I'm not really sure what to comment since I really don't have a good idea of what you're all talking about.
Okay, Avery. We're discussing item number 5, waiver exception and operating procedures, and that if you're online, you can see on the screen in front of us the request. So why don't you have a look at that? And Wolf Ulrich, if you go ahead, please, and then we'll come back to Avery.
Yes. So I wonder whether we are just discussing two different things. One is the question whether the council could take decisions, could move motions between meetings. So there was one question raised by Greg, and the other one was the question whether a motion... There was a reason why this problem came up, whether a motion could be talked or decided on and put to the table after the deadline. So I think these are different things. So if you are talking about these two things, then this is different. The one is the deadline regarding motions to be brought to the table before a meeting. And the other question is, are there any chances, well, for deciding or talking about and deciding about motions between meetings? So if I recall, there was one case in the past, but that was then done because of a certain time to be a certain deadline. So then it was handled that way, that the chair of the council called for officially a kind of very short term for a meeting. So for a call for that, and I don't think all people could participate in that. But they had, let me say, at the time being, they had representation on the call, or they delivered their message to that call in advance. So it could be handled, for example, that way. So I think we should distinguish between that both cases and not mix it. Thank you.
Thank you, Wolf Ulrich. Aubrey, please, go ahead.
Okay. Greg had put himself in the queue before me, but I'll go ahead. First of all, while I was chair, we didn't have this rule that I consider a silly rule on needing to get motions in a week, then 8 days, then 10 days, then pretty soon who knows how long. So that was never a problem. Motions got in. I personally think that it makes sense for there to be a clear-cut way to find an exception. I mean, in the old days, as it were, we did function much more on trust and much more on collegiality, but I don't think that the current construction is quite as lends itself quite as easily to that notion because of the permanently set oppositions that have been set up in the council as it's currently formed. So I think having a formal procedure that would enable a chair to move ahead on an exceptional basis is not an unreasonable thing to think of and would be useful to a chair. Thanks.
Thank you, Avery. That's exactly what I was looking for, some background. Thank you. Greg, please go ahead.
And to respond, you know, first to Wolf Ulrich, I think we should put aside any discussion of decision-making between meetings. Wasn't my intent to bring that into this discussion. I didn't bring it up in my original summation of the issue. Somehow it crept into this discussion, maybe even by an editing error, because the what specific changes do you propose to address the identified problem in the Adobe chat is answered by the SCI should consider whether and how the council could vote outside of a meeting and under what circumstances. I actually think that probably is an answer to a different problem, but I did want to respond to it because Marie-Laure brought it up. But I would like to actually table or get out of, you know, put aside any discussion of voting between meetings and concentrate specifically on the issue of can this rule, or if we want to, any other standing rule of the GNSO Council be waived by some form of unanimous consent by the council. I think that's really the only question that should be in front of us. And the other issue, I think, is a frolic and detour that somehow worked its way into the discussion and should work its way out of the discussion from now on. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. I think it's unless, Aubrey, you want to speak again, then it would be Anne. Anne, please go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Ron. This is Anne with IPC, and I do want to focus on the item that Greg just asked us to focus on in terms of whether counselors present or voting, I guess, could waive requirements of the operating procedures. And my big question in relation to all that is that counselors are representatives of constituencies. And in general, you know, various items that they're voting on are matters that have been presented in advance to the constituencies for feedback and discussion and consideration as to, you know, how a counselor should vote. If a counselor is to vote to waive one of the operating procedures, how does the counselor get the authority or the instant approval of the constituency or of the leadership to waive an operating procedure?
You're bringing up a very good point, Anne. In fact, the question really in my mind would be, is this something that could even, as you've just rightly said, could it even come to the table without the counselor having had been given direction from his or her constituency? So even if we said that the chair would have the authority to have an exception to the rule of the operating procedure under certain circumstances, the question is, how did that even get there? That was rattling in the back of my mind as well. So I see Greg's hand up, and then Jen Wolf, please.
I think this is Greg Shatton. I think it needs to be looked at. You know, procedure and substance need to be somewhat separated here. I don't want to get into, you know, any dichotomies like policy and implementation, or else we'll be here forever. But I think that voting, especially if we limit it to this particular procedure and not any procedure, which I frankly would suggest that we vote only to have a waiver for this particular procedure and see how it goes before we go on to some broader rule about waiver. I think the procedural voting to proceed by some slightly different procedure than is the general rule, you know, doesn't require, kind of the feedback from the stakeholder group or constituency. And I think that if any counselor feels that they shouldn't waive the rule because they don't have the guidance of their constituency on how to deal with the substantive motion, then they vote against waiver, and it's no longer consensus. But I think that while I'm strongly in favor of looking at counselors as representatives of their constituencies and not as some sort of, you know, council of elders, I think that suggesting that even matters of procedure can't be proceeded on without instruction is probably ties the hands of the group too much. And I think we have to look at what was the particular instance here. Again, you know, I realize it's a matter of general applicability that we want to look at, but in this case it was a final report that had already been before the council as a preliminary report, and I think all of the groups had, you know, reviewed the report, and the counselors all felt that they could support the report and didn't need further feedback from their constituents. Or I think it maybe because it was at a live, it was in Durban, they felt that they had access to their constituents and could vote in favor. And I think everyone was willing to vote on substance, was willing to vote on the motion in the room, even though it was, quote-unquote, untimely made. But because the 10-day rule is completely unwaivable, the group was unable to vote on it. And rather than there were some who felt that that Jonathan should just take an ad hoc chair's prerogative and waive it without any procedure to waive it, but just say let's just ignore it for a while, you know, based on nothing other than kind of good proceeding. And I think actually it was the IPC that said, we're not against waiving it, but we have no way to waive it, and an informal waiver by the chair is not a power the chair has. And Jonathan agreed with that. So the rule itself can result in some unfortunate circumstances because it's not necessarily a well-crafted rule, and in retrospect it probably should have had a waiver built into it in the first place that would allow the group, if they felt they could act on the substance of a motion, to be able to consider the motion, even if it was made less than 10 days before a meeting. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Greg. I see we're a minute past the hour. We got started late today, and I'm hopeful that the event can stay on just to finish this topic, because we have two more speakers. Jennifer Wolf is in the list, and Amar. So, Jennifer, please go ahead.
Sure, and I'll be very brief because I realize we're at the top of the hour, and definitely want to echo Greg's comments. You know, just three very quick points. This was a procedural issue and not a substantive issue, and I think it was in everyone's interest and in really the entire GNSO's interest to get that on the table and have it voted on, and I don't think that there was anybody who would likely disagree with that. So I think we're talking about how do we give the chair some latitude in such circumstances and avoid unnecessary delays to the policymaking process for which the GNSO is often criticized. And then third, just another point, the counselors, if you've ever sat around the table, and I'm, of course, the NOMCOM, the independent non-voting member, but I sit and talk with everyone during the meetings, and they are getting constant feedback through chats and emails, et cetera, throughout the process. So I don't think that they are cut off from access to their constituency. If such an issue is coming up, they could be getting feedback on that. And I think we just need to have some pragmaticism here to how do we get things done more efficiently, and that's part of our role as the SCI is to look for these opportunities to create some greater efficiencies in the process.
Well said, Jennifer. In fact, it's a perfect wrap-up statement for what we do here. I think that's a good way to conclude our discussions for today. We got started a little bit late today because a number of members had to join a little bit late, and so a couple of key people were not on when we were looking at a couple of agenda items that they were to speak to. So I would just ask on the next call if we can try to get on the call a little bit earlier, because I hate to keep people late and also staff often have to jump off of our call to jump on to another one. So just for futures. But with regard to today's meeting, thank you all very much for bringing some very important information to light. Lots to consider here on these elements. Clearly, we've heard very good arguments as to why a waiver is needed, and so I think this is something we need to figure out how to fine-tune. The issue of the guidelines on consensus, I've asked staff if they can provide us with a little bit more background
from the actual documents that were presented at that time, so we can get into that a little deeper next meeting. And then we'll also pick up the voting by email on our next call. So unless there's any other business that someone would like to bring to the table at this point, hearing none, I will thank everyone very much for getting on the call and for bringing your valuable thoughts. Good to hear from you, and look forward to speaking to you again in about 2 weeks, and hopefully we'll be able to give some consideration to these two critical elements we discussed today. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ron.
Thanks.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Thank you.